Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety, gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Tuesday Live Show. This is a show we do every Tuesday, answer questions. It is a YouTube live show, as you can see if you're on YouTube. It's also a podcast. You can listen to just the audio where we strip the audio out. And yeah, we answer questions that we receive during the week. Also, if you have a question, just put it in the chat and I'll answer the question there. I don't know everything, and so I answer the best I can based on my experience and knowledge. I'm wrong all the time, though. So if you're in the comments and want to answer a question too that helps me, you may have a better answer or the right answer. I could be totally wrong and you could just be right. So thanks for joining. And I'm going to put the agenda up here. First of all, I'm going to do a quick shout out to Go Light Outdoors Cat Frames. They'll answer questions. We have just two questions today. And I've been kind of geeking out with Mechanical Advantage stuff lately and making some videos. And I have a little chart behind me I want to talk about. And just talk about Mechanical Advantage for rafting and kayaking, mainly rafting, just to get some discussions going, get some thoughts going. Because I think there's a lot of information out there, and I think I can add to the misinformation pretty well. So to get started, let's talk about Go Light Outdoors. Last week, we had a question about cat frames. Which cat frame should I get based on, you know, I think my friend, he wanted to carry a passenger and do overnight trips and do hard stuff and do easy stuff and have a breakdown. It's a lot to ask. It's a lot to find one frame that does all of those things. And so I didn't have a very good answer. I was like, I don't know. Here's a couple ideas. I forgot about the Go Light Outdoors frame. And these are very nice frames if you want to break them down. And so Neil makes these. Neil travels down to Mexico and Ecuador and Peru all the time. He flies with this stuff. And he's really perfected the perfect boat to travel with. You know, for kayaking, it's pretty easy to go kayaking. You can a lot of times fly with a kayak or just get somewhere and go kayaking. There aren't oar boats and cataracts just around the world to rent. And when you're in a foreign country, you know, transporting this stuff is tough. If you want to get on a bus with a cataract, you know, good luck. So he's designed stuff that's super light, breaks down really nicely, and it's through a company, Whitewater Machine Works. He links to it here. This is his website, golightoutdoors.com, where he, you know, has a bunch of different cataracts he's designed and boats and frames. And I'm going to click over to Whitewater Design Works here, or Whitewater Machine Works, which is a raft frame manufacturer. It looks like mainly cat frames and raft frames. And they're the ones that actually manufacture these for Neil. I'm sure Neil has the specs based on his experience. And then, you know, Whitewater Machine Works, I'm guessing, is a manufacturer who's good at manufacturing. And so it's kind of a match made in heaven. And you can see these frames. I have one. They're pretty cool. They're, you know, wouldn't be my like top choice for running class five, but I wouldn't mind it either. You know, it's a trade-off. You know, you get this frame that breaks down, which is great, but maybe when it's put together, it's not perfect for class five, but it's pretty good. Like, it's pretty good. I'd be pretty happy with this frame running a lot of stuff. These cool oar towers, which you can set them as you want pretty easily, but also you just unscrew them and they fall over, making it super easy to stack boats. So a lot of nice things. And it's designed to pack, you can see, package small for travel. You know, you can put it in a bag and you get on an airplane. It's going to cost money for all the extra bags. And then once you get there, put it all together. The one thing I don't like about it, and there's probably nothing they can do about it, is that we all carry a half inch socket because NRS frames use half inch sockets. And it's just ubiquitous. So if you're rowing an oar boat, you should probably have an oar boat socket. I carry mine on my PFD a lot just because I know I need it more than the average person. But in our repair kits, this requires another tool. And the reason this annoys me so much is because I took this frame to a course to use it, and we didn't have this Allen key, and it was incredibly frustrating. And that happens all the time in the world. You know, if some manufacturer uses a half-inch bolt, someone uses 7/16, someone uses Allen keys, someone uses, you know, we can't carry a toolkit with us on the river. We can carry some tools. And so sometimes we forget, or maybe the tool, maybe we bring somebody else's kit for some reason. I really would love it if they could have figured out how to make this half inch, use a half inch socket to do this. I know it totally messes with everything they're doing. So it makes sense, I guess, to do what they want, but it's a little frustrating. And it is as easy as having just one tool and remembering it, but I've forgotten it. So I know how challenging that is. So yeah, this is a really cool idea for a breakdown cat frame and pretty solidly made. Again, I probably would run this down class 5, although it's probably not my, my top choice. And then they make wrap frames too. I don't know much about them, honestly, other than I own one of these cat frames. And I think they make, frames for the little tiny boats. Those are cute. Anyway, just want to mention that because I didn't think of it last week, and I think it's a worthwhile thing. Let's go and answer some questions. And the first one is about finding a boating group. I get this question all the time. I just moved to PDX's Portland and looking for some friends. I've done videos about this, so you can just Google my video, like, how do I make boating friends? The quick answer is go boating. I don't know. Just go to a river, find some people, be cool. Don't be annoying. Like, help load boats, have a truck. Don't just have a car. Don't make people wait on you. Provide safety on the river. Carry a first aid kit. Have training. Be an asset. Basically, be an asset. This is a good life lesson. Be useful and be a joy to be around. That's how you make friends. Or you go boating and you're just like, cool. And they'll be like, oh, that guy's helpful. That guy or gal is helpful and nice. And I'd like to boat with them again. If you go on the trip and you're just a mooch and a leech and you're not looking out for each other, for other people, you shouldn't get invited to go with other people. The best way to make an initial contact, right now, Facebook is pretty good. There's a club in Portland. There's the Oregon Whitewater Association. You go to meetings and make friends, and that's a great way to start. But also, go like a Facebook group that's like PDX Kayaker here in Portland. So it's hard, and I know. And to me, boating is a team sport. This is not a thing you do individually. You don't go by yourself, or you don't just go and like people are with you, but like you're not part of the team. You kind of got to be part of the team. You got to like look out for the people and set safety and like have good boat spacing and eddy up below eddies and look behind you. And so I think playing like team game is super important. So hopefully that helps. I've kind of probably answered your question more than you need, but good luck with that. Sean commented, better mounts towers are awesome, but they use a 14 millimeter instead of half inch nuts. Yep. I actually, when I ordered my most recent better mount frames, I said, I want the half inch nuts. And I guess they're harder to make, harder to find. I don't know. They cost more, but I said, I just will not take 14 millimeter. Like I won't even get them with 14 millimeter because it's just one more tool that I will forget. And so you can, and maybe he just did it for me, but you can't ask him like, hey, give me those half inch nuts. But it's frustrating when every frame has different tools because we're not going to all carry a toolbox with us. It's just not realistic. But as boaters, we have a responsibility to have tools for everything on our boat. So if we get to put in, we can adjust it. Or what happens with these boats, especially, I'm going to go back to this. If you look at these, do these pictures get bigger? No, that's too bad. These oar towers, you can kind of see there, they're just attached with a couple bolts. If you flip this boat, that oar tower could likely hit a rock or something. It will twist in, right? It's not going to stay. It might stay in its position, but if it hits something hard, it's going to twist in. And so when you flip the boat back over, you have to readjust that oar tower a lot of times before you can start rowing. I've seen this happen a million times. We get the boat flipped back over, and then we can't row it because the oar towers are bent. And nobody has the tool to fix it. That's why I carry a half-inch socket in my PFD sometimes. So when an oar boat flips over, I can quickly fix the oar tower and go. And, that's just not acceptable in, like, class 5. Like, if you flip over, you need to flip the boat back over and go. So it's, like, that's one disadvantage in class 5 for this frame is if the oar towers you know, if they bend in, you're not going to get your reflip in time and fix your oar tower and be able to go. It's a little bit of a problem, or really continuous rivers or whatever. So why am I on a tangent all of a sudden? Anyway, that's why, like, or if I jump on somebody else's boat, like I've been kayaking before where somebody flips, I paddle to the raft, I get out of my kayak into the raft, flip the raft back over, and I need that raft to work. Well, if I don't have a toolkit in my PFD, I have a half inch socket. So if I'm flipping somebody else's boat back over, I don't have a 14 millimeter with me. So honestly, like, I can't fix that oar tower. It's just not realistic until I get the boat to shore. And then hopefully somebody else shows up with that 14 millimeter socket, you know. And again, the number of times I've not had the tool to fix the thing is, you think I would not make that mistake again? We're all making the mistake. We really would like in it to have them all to be the same. And I feel like NRS has set the standard. We're half inch. We kind of got to go with that. That's, you know, a huge percentage of frames now. So to switch it now is tough. So Sean, yeah. Yep. I agree. Maybe next time you order stuff, you can maybe call them and say, hey, can I buy nuts from you to switch out to make them half inch? Okay. Next question. I have had a dream to do a low water Illinois river trip in my pack raft. My friends ran the river in the 70s and inner tubes. Oh, that's cool. Yep. I guided on the Illinois for a couple of seasons, late 70s, early 80s, but have not been back. What do you think about my idea? I don't want an epic. Those days are mostly behind me, but I would love to get back. Any thoughts on water level, whether this is a crazy idea or any other thoughts, are very much appreciated. So a lot of people want to do the Illinois in general, which is for a good reason. It's like in my opinion, the best trip. It's like ridiculous scenery, changing scenery, crazy flowers, clear water, hard rapids, 4 days, 3 days, you can do three, you can do 2 days if you want. I don't know. It's got it all. It's amazing. It's just cold. You got to do it in the winter usually. And there's the reason people don't do it is it can be cold. It's not, there's no dam, there's no reliable water. So it's like the water changes. So you have, not only have to, like, you can't plan a trip ahead of time. You got to kind of hope the water's there. And you can't just hope for water the first day to make sure you have, it's not going to spike on you on day two. And, you know, there's a lot to it. It's a lot to plan. It's advanced. And so a lot of people, like I said, want to do it. I'm trying to find a way to do it. I think, so let me go through this. Your friends ran the river in the 70s and inner tubes. Cool. I mean, people do awesome stuff. I know people have gone on the Calmeopsis on air mattresses and ran some random creeks. You know, low water, you know, if you're willing to go on an adventure, then yeah, I think that's something. Sorry, I have to grab my pen I dropped. There we go. That's something that people do adventures and they do crazy stuff and they're taking risk and doing stuff in inner tubes and air mattresses and stuff. So I was a guide for a couple of seasons. I mean, they're lucky. That was probably an awesome time to be there. And it's an awesome place. It's going to be as amazing as you remember. It's one of those rivers you're like, yep, this is as amazing as I remember. But you want to pack raft it. I mean, I have no idea. Are you good at pack rafting? Yeah. If you do it at low water, you know, the Illinois has a lot of flat water. So most of it's going to be just paddling flat water. And then you can portage any of the rapids. And you can portage any of them in a pack raft. Pretty fairly easy. I mean, the submarine hole might be tough to portage. There's a few that will be a lot of work to portage. But if you got there and you're just like, no, that looks insane, you could portage it, but it would be a lot of work. And so I don't want to be in an epic. Well, that's where it's tough. I want to do this thing, but I don't want it to be an epic. That's the thing with the Illinois is, like, it's hard. And so if you want to do the Illinois, but have it not be an epic, just go do the Rogue. The Rogue's right there. Like, I don't know. Part of the Illinois is that it may be an epic just based on it's in the middle of nowhere. There's an Illinois River Trail. The trail itself only gets near river level once, and there's only realistic access to it one other time. So there's a trail, but it's really far away. You're not hiking out if somebody gets hurt. You're getting a helicopter out. Like, there's no, unless you can float them down somehow. Like, it's you're out there. If things go wrong, they go wrong. And it's, yeah, it's a wild place. So I don't know. It may be an epic. And if you, it sounds fun, but if you don't want an epic, then I don't know. Go, just go do the rogue or something like that, maybe. Water level, I thought some water. Yeah, I mean, I think, again, without knowing you and your experience as a kayaker and your fitness and your boat and your how heavy you're going to load it and who you're going with, and without knowing like 10 different things I should know to answer this question, I would say anywhere between like 100 and 400 CFS. I know people have done this, what you're saying, and had a good time. So again, I don't know anything about you other than you have a dream to do this and your friends did it in inner tubes and you guided there in the 70s, 80s. So I'm a fan of adventures. If you want to get a couple of hearty friends and go out and have an adventure, that sounds awesome. But if you don't want an epic, then I can't guarantee that. So hopefully that helps. Okay. That's the end of the questions. Yeah. Bucket boats. Yeah. Man, bucket boats. That would have been pretty hard on the Illinois. That would have been hard. I can't even imagine that, honestly. It sounds cold because you have to bail all the time and it's cold water and your feet are in the cold water. Well, we have it so comfy now. And those boats give so much. It just, it makes it, honestly, bucket boats make it a great harder. Like it's plus one harder than it is today. People were also, you know, a lot sturdier back then. I remember, actually today I was reading an old blog post from Echo, the company I worked for before I started my own. And it was a quote from Dick or Joe, but it says, back then people's idea of fun was to be cold, wet, and scared. Like people actually liked that. They went out on these trips to like, you know, they wanted epics. Now people that go on our trips, they want to see a beautiful place and have a good time and be challenged, but they don't want an epic. Yeah. So hopefully that helps answer the question. I love this kind of stuff. But kind of goes back to the first question. Like if you have a team, I think the key, in my mind, the key to this is a team. Like, are there three or four of you who know each other, trust each other, can look out for each other, have done other rivers together? I would say the difference between a just regular trip and an epic, the difference a lot of times is the team. And, you know, a team can stop stuff from happening and can help each other out. Like if there's not a good team, that's when epics sometimes happen. But I do know that people pack raft it. And come on, let's go here. Let's go to California Creeks, Illinois River, Bill Tuttle's website. Bill's done, I bet, a bunch of trips. Let's see what Bill says. Rafts and kayaks, 800 to 3,500. IK minimum, 400. I think you can do IKs lower than that, which I consider a pack raft and IK in a lot of ways. I've rafted it at 650 with a 16-foot gearboat. And we've run a commercial trip at around 400 with rafts. So I know rafts can get down at a 400. I know multiple commercial trips have gone down at 400 with rafts. And I know IKs can do a pretty low. So there's probably some good photos. If you go to this website, and advice about low water inflatable kayak. Although I don't see a lot of low water photos here. Bill's the kind of guy that would have done it. Yeah, this is all kind of like higher water-ish. But this, I mean, Bill says low water is 400 for duckies. I think you go down to 100 and you're just going to portage some stuff. You're going to portage. You know who's done is Matt Cronin. Matt Cronin sometimes is on the show. He does it in his Cronin inflatable boats. I think he does it pretty low. And so that's another person to reach out to is Matt Cronin, who does it. He has these new, this would be the boat. Cronin inflatables. The one thing about the pack rafts, in my experience, is that they're not like the best whitewater crafts. Just like they're fine. They do fine. They're adequate. But they're not as good as whitewater boats. And I know that packraft people think they're whitewater boats and they kind of are, but they're really intended for people going backpacking across lakes and like go down like class one and two. Just people who are good boaters or like not good boaters have chosen to take them on more difficult runs. You don't have to hike into the Illinois, so you don't need a pack raft. You can take a regular raft. Like a pack, the idea of a pack raft is you carry it in. I have friends have done the Illinois in pack rafts where they launched at Miami Bar, I think Miami Bar, they floated down to Silver Creek and they hiked. That's the one place the trail is near the river, and they hiked back to put in. That's kind of cool. Like that's a good use of a pack raft. Like just two of them drove their car to put in. They paddle down and hike back. Like that's a great use of a pack raft. If you're going to drive to put in, drive to take out, I would just use a ducky, like a real IK. So and Cronin, and this boat is pretty sweet for it. Honestly, like he takes people down to Illinois all the time, pretty low water. I don't know what the levels are. I think people have done the Chetco in these things too. And he has one that has the low. Yeah, here we go. The Chetco pack raft. I don't see any photos of it, but it's a light one. Well, light doesn't matter because you're not hiking it in. But he has one that has, I think it has zippers and you can put stuff inside of it if that's the thing you want to do. But yeah, I would go with a Cronin. I would go, you know, I designed the, I think that looks like the Packraft version. Wow. Little Cronin to forks of the Cronin. That's cool. There's a pack rafter saving a kayak. I mean, these things are pretty cool. Lots of good photos. But I think these Cronins, I would be more excited about these because I feel like with the pack rafter, you're gonna be hitting your butt a lot. Pack rafts, I've seen them break, like get holes in them, gashes in them. Not that they always do that, but I would do it in an inflatable kayak of some sort. There's this one or... Yeah, and just going, just to follow up, sorry, I'm on a tangent now. Paco, pack raft. The one thing I've noticed when I've done low water trips with these is that they're hitting, they don't do really well because they have a low surface area, so they sit lower in the water with the same amount of gear. A ducky's longer and bigger and wider, so when you put the same amount of gear in there, it sits higher in the water. So if you do a low water Illinois with a pack raft, you're going to be lower in the water and being getting stuck on the rocks more. It's just going to be a pain. If you're in a ducky or a larger boat, a longer boat, you'd be sitting higher and go over the shallow rocks a lot better. And that's why, like the Chetco, pack rafts can make it down the Chetco. And if you don't know what the Chetco is, it's a river just to the west of the Illinois, south and west and north. It's right by the Illinois. And we hike in 10 miles to do this trip. And I had a friend in the pack raft, and he did fine, but he couldn't carry as much gear, and it was more of a struggle on low water stuff. And so here they actually have river running and whitewater boats. I think they've upgraded their boats. This boat, the Valkyrie, looks sick. Just so I like can be very clear. This, like when I was just saying, like pack rafts aren't really made for whitewater, in my opinion. This Valkyrie is. But not for low water stuff. I think this is great for like actually kayaking where there's water. If it's a low water Illinois, I would want that's a pretty big looking boat. I kind of want one of these. These are really cool looking. I've never seen one in person, but I've seen videos of it and it's shaped like a kayak. It paddles like a kayak. It looks amazing. Look at that. Anyway, the one struggle I have with pack rafts is the stern. So this is like a real kayak stern. I think that these weird sterns on them, I think are weird. They just do that to put volume in the back, but like it handles, to me, weird, to me, strangely. And pack rafters are probably screaming at me right now, you don't know what you're talking about. And they're right, I don't. But I have a pack raft. I have a narwhal. And it's fine. It's like an inner tube kind of, but like fancier, more expensive. And so... I wouldn't. So long story short, this Valkyrie is super sweet. I think would be a good whitewater pack raft. But if I'm going to do the Illinois, I'm probably going to do it at low water. I'm probably not going to take a pack raft. And your friends did it in an inner tube, so they probably figured it out, but I'm sure it was an epic. I'd probably take some sort of inflatable kayak. And the one that I designed for this type of trip is Wing Makes. And now Sotar used to. Sotar probably has a design still. Is this Wing Jimbo, which I'm not even sure they still make, but it handles this kind of low water very, very, very well. And I mean, they cost like, they're stupidly expensive now. I'm not sure they still make them, but we've used these. There's one on the Chetco. That's one of my photos from the Chetco. You know, they go over low water really well. So I think if you're athletic and you understand your boater and you have good friends and you had things like a Jimbo, I think you'd have a great time. Pack rafts, I personally feel like would be a adventure. Okay, cool. I think I've pontificated about this one enough. So that's the last question. I want to do a little quick talk about mechanical advantage stuff because I've been just nerding out about it. And the thing that happens to me is I'm just going to brag for a second. I studied mechanical engineering. Like, I have a college degree. You're all probably surprised, but I do. Even though I don't use it, I did study it. And so I know how to do math. I can do some basic math. I can visualize mechanical advantage really well. And I understand like force and just basic physics. So I have an understanding of basic physics. And I've been a part of a lot of wraps. And so I've got to pull a lot of wraps off, which has given me time to debrief them with my friends and what worked and what didn't work. And I dealt a lot of just stuck boats, like boats stuck on rocks. And, you know, sometimes when we're dealing with that, we have to pull really hard. And so I have not only some education in this, but some experience dealing with like stuck boats, stuck rafts. And then I have a lot of guides who work for me and friends who I boat with who take rescue classes, and the rescue class instructors tell them things that I think are kind of suspect. And the problem is I'm not a rescue instructor, so I shouldn't say anything. I should just be quiet. I should just not even talk about this, but I'm going to, because I want to start a discussion. The idea is to start a discussion. If I don't say these words out in public, then like I can't get this discussion going. I'm just like, things are in my head and they're not out there. And nobody's there to say, hey, Zach, you're wrong. You're an idiot. So I think what's happened with, and I've had like an example is a rescue instructor who one of my guides took a class with told my guide that a vector pull is a 10-to-1 mechanical advantage, which is just like straight up wrong, like on so many levels. And it shows me that their understanding of what's happening is just non-existent. Like, they have a non-existent understanding of the vector pull, but they're teaching it. And I've had instructors tell guides other things like that and teach them techniques that like are kind of cool, but like I'm worried about getting an 18-foot gearboat unstuck from Blossom. I'm sending them to a rescue class, so hopefully they have some insights on how to get an 18-foot gearboat stuck in Blossom and done. And they're learning about things that like are fun tricks, but will absolutely not work. And so I disagree with some of the things I hear these instructors are saying. I have to. It's my job. And we have to get 18-foot gearboats unstuck, or 16-foot gearboats unstuck, or big heavy boats unstuck, or even light boats unstuck. And so the technique that gets used a lot is just pulling really hard. And I want to preface this with, like, when we're pulling unstuck boats off rocks, before we do all this, we're going to try the other things first. We're going to, like, push and pull on it with our hands. We're going to maybe deflate some air out of some tubes that are strategic. I'm not going to tell you which ones to do, but like there's some tube things you can do. We're going to jump up and down on the raft. We're going to try to do everything we can without ropes in the water, right? Without rope. We just want to do all these things. Just try all these techniques we have. And I've done videos about these techniques. I'm not going to get into it now. And then once we get a rope to the raft, we're going to pull it a lot of directions next. We're not just going to like choose a direction based on what's convenient for us. We're going to try a lot of different angles out next. And once we, like, the way I think of it is, like, once you start pulling, you're like, oh, that's doing something. And, like, wow, we need a little bit more pull. That's, in my mind, a good time to start playing with some mechanical advantage. Like, let's do this. And there's one advantage of systems, mechanical advantage systems, is you also get progress capture. So you, like, pull it, and you take a break. Like, okay, all right, we got it somewhere. And then you pull it. And then you take a break, and that progress is captured as you bring it in. So that's an advantage of some of these systems we can create versus just like pulling really hard. We didn't make it. And you have to give up all your pull and start over again, which is fine. You don't have to have progress capture, by the way. You can just sometimes you just pull and it comes off, and you're like, cool, we did it. Let's go. Time to go make dinner. So I made this little graph. I've been thinking about this graph a lot. And I was going to do a whole Gear Garage video about this, but I don't know. I got lazy and thought, well, we can just do it live on the show. And hopefully you can see this if you're watching. Oh, maybe make myself big. That would probably help. My little thing. These are like different, I'm going to call them whitewater haul systems. And they're horizontal. They're not vertical. So a key thing here is like we're not like raising and lowering people on ropes. So a lot of rescue people, a lot of like, people who geek out on rescue, they move on to advanced rescue and vertical lifts, and they're like doing crevasse rescue. And like, we're not doing that. Like, although a lot of people are learning from or like love that stuff, and they love all the gear with it and all the little ascender thingies. And we're literally just pulling things horizontal to the ground. We're not going up and down. There's not lives at the end of this. But the dangerous thing that we have to keep in mind is if we're pulling on a raft, usually through D-rings, and those break, the loaded system will come back with a lot more force than you can imagine and hurt, maim, kill someone. So whatever that line of fire is we're pulling, we don't want to be in it. Or we want to have done things to deal with like all of the possibilities of like those things firing back at us. We want to be careful of this highly tensioned system, which can explode and cause problems for us. We don't want these problems. Okay, so the key is that we're doing horizontal haul systems. We're not doing vertical haul systems. We're not doing glacier crevasse rescue. We're not bringing somebody up on a litter. It's horizontal. I'm keeping to that. So, you know, when you comment later, you're like, well, but you got to do this. Like, that matters for crevasse rescue, but not for us. So there's a few systems that I think we kind of geek out on or that come up in classes and that we talk about in whitewater. And these are the classic Z-rig, the 3-to-1 Z-rig. This is the one I feel strongly we should be using. Just keep it simple. And because we've all been to classes where they hopefully at a minimum they touched on this. But this is what people have been doing since the beginning of rafting. This is the gear we all agree that we should bring, like some pulleys, some prusiks, some carabiners. You know, it's the gear we have. It's the knowledge base we have. It's what's generally taught. It's pretty easy to remember. Not super easy to remember, but pretty easy to remember and has some cool advantages. So I'm a big fan of the 3-to-1 for doing this stuff. And then there's the vector pull, which, you know, you just get a tight rope and you pull. Hopefully, if you're watching, you know what that is. You just get a really tight rope and you pull in the middle and it does some stuff. Then there's a transport hitch, which is this really cool thing. I did a couple of videos about it for the channel if you look. It's super cool. It's very, very cool. But it's not, you know, it has disadvantages too. The pig rig, which is a 4-to-1. Which I'm sure if you're a rescue squirrel and you're good at rescue stuff, I challenge you to go set up a pig rig in your backyard right now. It's really hard to remember how to do. Like, so, yeah. But it's kind of cool. It's 4-to-1. I mean, the Z-rig's 3-to-1. The pig rig is 4-to-1. It only requires a little bit more gear. It's kind of cool. And then there's like a 5-to-1 and a 9-to-1. Right? And so these are things that are not that much harder. Once you've done a 3-to-1, creating a 5-to-1 or 9-to-1 is not that much more work. It's like more work to manage it when you have a setup because there's more things moving around, but it's not that much more work. Okay. And just before I go into this, I want to preface this. When those of you watching, when you think I'm wrong, just like type in the comments, you're wrong. I need the feedback. I'm putting out things in my head. I've come up with this in my own brain. Nobody has been like, Zach, that's a bad idea yet. I need you to come to me and say, that's a bad idea. My rescue instructor said this and you're wrong. Like, tell me. And those of you that are actual real rescue instructors, you know, jump in and be like, hey, you're wrong, because I need to hear that. I'm just trying to put some logic on the board. Hopefully nobody sees this as me educating them on rescue stuff. You should get your education from a certified rescue instructor. Okay. So a Z-rig, we're just going to go down and fill some of these things out real quick. Theoretically, is 3-to-1. Theoretically, just, you probably already all know that. And I'm hyper aware that I have to move away from my microphone, so my audio is going to go weird when I go backwards a little bit. In reality, when you get pulleys and stretchy rope, it's more like 2.4 to 1. It can be as high as like 2.5-ish, maybe 2.6 with good gear, and it can be down to like 1.5 with bad gear. I'm just going to say 2.4-to-1. It has like, I'm going to move over here. Maybe I can have, it can be better over here. Its progress capture is like so-so. My handwriting is really bad today. Like, we all know, or you probably know, if you've done a 3-to-1, you're like, we have progress capture. You put a little Prusik on, but it doesn't, if you use a Prusik mining pulley, it doesn't really mind as well as we all hope. And and somebody ends up having to like manage it, and their hands might get caught in the pulley, and the thing breaks during the line of fire. It's not my favorite way to go. And for covering distance, it's great. For like when you're pulling a thing, you have to pull it. You go a few feet, maybe more, right? When you start pulling on it, you're going to pull a foot out of sometimes, maybe more, of just tightening knots, stretching the raft, stretching the ropes. There's a foot or two of that. Just, you got to pull on just to get stretch out of things before you actually can pull on the raft. So for covering distance, it's really good. We'll get to that in a second. In part because you can put that one pulley pretty far out. And once you get to a certain distance, you can move the pulley further. So it's really good at covering distance. The vector pull, theoretically, it is actually infinite. And I know a lot of you are going to say, no, it's not. In theory, at the exact moment, it goes from being completely straight to like that exact moment for a amount of time that is infinitely small. It is theoretically infinite. Just so like, it's just infinite when it's exactly straight. Straight when it's perfectly straight. When it gets any deflection, it's not infinite anymore. The vector pull mechanical advantage drops dramatically with angle. So as this angle increases, it drops from infinity to like the real world very quick. So I'm going to say the real mechanical advantage, when you're at 10 degrees, you're at like 2.9 to 1 theoretical. When this is like, excuse me, when this is 10 degrees, these angles are 10 degrees, you're at 2.9 theoretical. I'm going to say you're like max, we'll say 2.8 to 1. That's like, because when you're getting infinite here, but all that force is stretching out the rope, the webbing, everything that's moving the tree, maybe, who knows? Like, there is, once it starts, things happen, you get angle, you get deflection. You're really not going to get a vector pull at less than 10 degrees. It's always going to be 10 degrees, in my opinion, in my experience doing it. And it's going to go down fast from there. It goes from 2.8 to 1 to like 1 to 1 at 30 degrees. It goes real fast. So max 2.8 to 1. That's real things. Progress capture, really bad. Like, basically non-existent. You pull and you give it up. You pull and you give it up. So like, it doesn't capture progress. Like, you can maybe come up with ways of the transport hitch, but really, honestly, it's pretty bad. And then for covering distance, no, all you get is what you pull. You like, it covers a little bit and you have to give it back. So when you use a vector pull, you're getting like almost no distance. So like almost none. So if you need to pull a raft a foot to get where you need it, it's really hard to pull on a foot. I mean, the transport hitch, which is the coolest little thing. Like, whether you like it or not, or use it or not, learning how to do it is just fun, and it's just the coolest, weirdest thing. And it has a lot of application, actually, for a lot of stuff. So theoretical mechanical advantage on the transport hitch is 3.3 to 1. If you're using ropes over carabiners to do it, you're going to get 1.1 to 1, about 1.1 to 1. If you're using fancy webbing, about 1.7 to 1. I'm going to call this just like, I don't know, like 1.4 to 1. And that's me being generous. It doesn't really, it theoretically has mechanical advantage, but it's also very dependent on friction for to capture progress. I'll be nicer. Oh, let's just call it 2 to 1, just because I know. Well, no, I'm not gonna say 2 to 1. I know with webbing, with like high, you'll see a video. I already did the video, I think, or the video's coming out. I can't remember. But like with high, ultra high molecular weight polyethylene webbing, you can get like 1.7 to 1. So let's say you don't use the rope. You do that, and you can use pulleys, and people say it doesn't work. With pulleys, the friction doesn't work, but we just did it the other day. It works. It might depend on your pulley, but like you can use pulleys in a transport hitch, and then you might get like, let's just be here, like 1.1 to 1. 1.1 to 1 is like rope. 1.7 to 1 is fancy webbing. You can probably get like 2.4 to 1 with pulleys. You may not get progress capture perfect, but we just did it in the world. Okay, so anyway, progress capture, awesome. This is like the best way to capture progress. It's amazing. It's so sick. But for distance, for like covering distance, it's really hard to reset this whole thing. So I'm just going to say bad. It doesn't really cover distance. It's better than the vector pull, but like what happens is you end up doing the transport hitch and you're carabiner, and you can't, it's hard to reset the whole thing. So it doesn't really cover distance very well. Okay. Pig rig, theoretical, 4 to 1. You probably have all heard of this, maybe. It's a piggyback system. It's like you're not using the main haul line. You're throwing a system on top of the haul line. So it's piggybacking on top of it. And you're basically just creating a 2 to 1 on top of a 2 to 1. Okay. Real mechanical advantage. I've never tested it, but like it's sort of like the Z-Rig in a lot of ways. It probably loses similar amounts. So I'm going to say like about 3 to 1. I'm just guessing. I don't know. About 3 to 1. Okay. I did a terrible job of erasing there. I'm not very good at my whiteboard. 3 to 1. Let's just say, theoretically, it depends on your pulleys. Highly dependent on your pulleys. If you're using those little $20 things in your PFD that you got, they're terrible. They're awful. You're more like 2 to 1 at best. If you're using high quality Rock Exotica pulleys, you're on the high end, which is probably like more than 3 to 1. If you're using Petzl pulleys, you're close to that, right? So, progress capture, it's tougher. It's okay. Let's just say it's okay. You can do some of the stuff you can do with the Z-Rig. It's a little harder. It's okay. And for distance, it's good. Yeah. You can cover distance too. Like if you need to keep pulling and then keep, depending on how you do it, you can keep resetting it. So it's good. Yeah, it's good. Not bad. And then the 5 to 1 and 9 to 1 are just adding, you can add pulleys onto a Z-Rig to get a lot more mechanical advantage pretty quick. It just requires a lot more resetting the system. So theoretical, I'm just going to say you get some pretty good, well, we don't just get good. Theoretically, it's actually, what am I doing? I'm getting ahead of myself. Theoretically, these are actually 5 to 1 and 9 to 1. 9 to 1 is pretty good. And then real is more, I've done some tests and got varying results. It's more like 3.2 to 1, and this is more like 7 to 1. But don't, like, that's an approximate symbol. Like, I'm just coming up with this out of my memory, having done it a few times. I've done worse and done pretty well. Progress capture, so-so. It's about the same as a 3 to 1. You got to deal with the prusik that's moving and all the stuff. And then for covering distance, it's actually pretty good. Yeah, it's good. So one thing about all of these systems that I just want to talk about is we should be following this thing before I get into like some conclusions here and some thoughts. We should be following this thing called the rule of 12s. I'm not sure who made this rule up. I'm not sure where it came from. A friend of mine said it once, and I'm like, I'd like the rule of 12s, where our theoretical mechanical advantage on a pull should never go beyond 12 to 1. And I think it's a good rule. So if you're doing a 3 to 1, you should have at most four people pulling. 3 times 4 is 12, right? If 5 people pull, you're at a 15. That's too much. And part of the reason is because like one really strong person can pull about a kilonewton. Now, most people can't. 1 kilonewton is an impressive pull. Most of us are like pulling 0.5, 0.6. So, but a really strong person can pull a kilonewton. And if there's four pulling on a theoretical three to one, that's theoretically 12 kilonewtons being pulled. And a lot of the stuff that we're using has maximum breaking strengths of 20 kilonewtons. Like, I don't know, this like 17 to 23 kilonewtons is like pulleys, prussics, carabiners, all that stuff is in that range. And so we're quickly approaching it, not because we're pulling directly, but then we're multiplying our pull a few times in there too. So, you know, with a 12 to 1 theoretical, we're probably actually getting like, if theoretically we're pulling 12 kilonewtons at most, we're probably only pulling 6, which I think is within the margin of safety. We don't want to be pushing our equipment past 10 if we can help it. We shouldn't be doing that. So that's a long way of me saying like 12 people power. So like if we're doing a vector pull, well, we're theoretically infinity here, but honestly, we're really 3 to 1. You can pull, treat a vector pull to me like a 3 to 1. The finance verdict, do whatever you want. Honestly, pig rig, only have 3 people pulling on a pig rig. And then only 2 on a 5 to 1 and only 1 on a 9 to 1. A 9 to 1 is a nice party trick if you're by yourself. Like, oh, I need 9 of me, right? But I wouldn't put, like, once you do a 9 to 1, you start putting multiple people on it, that's how things explode and people get hurt. So I really like the rule of 12s. Just like whatever you're doing, limit it that. If you start breaking the rule of 12s, you should be hyper aware that you're starting to stress your system. You're like, things are getting, we're crossing some borders in terms of our equipment. There's equipment you can have to help. You can have beefier ropes. These are steel carabiners, right? Like get some steel carabiners that are expensive, but they're rated a lot higher. You know, do like wrap 3, pull 2 in your anchors, do like 5-point anchors on your rafts or whatever. Like, but with the normal stuff we're using, the normal stuff, and I'm a big fan of the normal stuff. Like let's use webbing, prussics, carabiners, pulleys, things that we've just always been using forever. Let's not introduce things like micro traction and all these and like VT prussics and things that confuse everybody. Like let's just use the stuff we've always used forever that almost everybody has, that we all have a common language on how to use. Right. But if you did go bigger, that's when you would want like the heavy duty stuff, like steel carabiners. Cool. So just to conclude this little exercise and looking at all of this, I think that the 3 to 1 is just really good. You know, some things are better at certain things. Some things are worse at certain things, but you know, you get mechanical advantage. It's like, you understand. It's 3 to 1. In the real world, it's probably like 2.4 to 1, which is pretty good, assuming you have good stuff. It can capture progress, and it can cover distance. You can keep pulling the stuff in. It's just solid. Whereas like the vector pull, you don't like get distance. You can like get some, you can get some force generated for a short distance, but your angle gets really large once you cover distance and it's done. So like the vector pull, like this is one of the reasons it's just not that great. The transport hitch is kind of a fun party trick, but again, doesn't really cover distance, and it's just people don't remember how to do it, and it's not actually that good a mechanical advantage. Pig rig is just nobody even remembers how to do it. It's kind of cool, but why bother? And these start to get dangerous. These start to get you into high forces. So lots of cool tricks. And if you're like, I would say like, if you're a boater who, you know, I boat a bit, I want to have some general knowledge about safety. I want to help if there's some sort of incident. Let's focus on this. This is my opinion. It might seem like I'm teaching a class because I'm on a video and it's YouTube. There's a whiteboard here. I have a whiteboard marker. Like this is just me putting words up here and me having a discussion to generate some discussion so that somebody can say, well, Zach, actually, and I'm like, oh, that's cool. I never thought of that. That's how I learned. So, but if based on like my experience and my learning, I really feel like this is just a nice way to go because of these. It does a good job of everything. These things. So if you're a regular boater, you're like a participant. You're maybe a trip leader. Having good knowledge of this is key. If you're a safety squirrel, if you're somebody who like, I want to be ready for anything, whether I'm like with, if there's just two of us on a trip, if I'm kayaking, I have no gear. There's some weird situation. It's so rad to learn all this stuff and to practice with it and learn it, right? Like these are good tricks to have in our tool chest. They are cool things to know how to use, and they have application, but in our day to day managing boats that are stuck, managing boats that are wrapped, for most people, I feel like we're here. For like, again, the safety squirrels who want to learn some cool things, these things are next. But these things do take practice. Like, I'm pretty sure you can't set up a transport hitch, learn how to do it, and even 2 weeks later remember how to do it. Like, it's really hard to remember. It's a weird one. You have to practice it. The pig rig, same thing. It's so hard to remember just from like, especially when you're out in the field, your hands are cold, you're stressed, you have anxiety because of what just happened. People are watching you and you're like, oh, I got to remember how to do all these things, but my mind is blank and I'm having a hard time. And so like these things, you have to continually drill. Like, you have to train on them. You can't just learn them once and then apply them 7 years later or 2 years later or 2 weeks later. So that's why I feel so strongly like, let's all really get good at this one. And once you have that dialed and you're a badass, then you can start geeking out on some of the cool stuff. And it is cool stuff. I'm telling you, go, if you haven't done it yet, go set up a transport hitch. It is just cool. It's fun to do. It makes you feel cool. Check it out. So yeah, so that's my thoughts about this. Let's get to see some comments. Oh, cool. You're all good. Well, if you're a good pack rafter, I think you're going to have a great time on Illinois. Sorry I had talked you out of a pack raft. You probably are like, I love my pack rafts. But I'm just saying, like, you probably have more fun than a ducky. Okay. If Wing's got a spec, yeah. I mean, they'll do it. It's just those Wing boats are so expensive. So expensive. They've gotten very expensive. What words would you use to convince friends stagnant on safety training to become proactive versus reactive? I'm not sure what you're asking. What words would you use to convince friends stagnant on safety training? So people that aren't continuing their safety training, how would you get them to do more training? I have no idea. I once in a while, like, hey guys, it's all like in Hood River, let's get together for half a day of throwback practice, rescue practice. Everybody's like, nah, maybe next month. Like, the idea of it sounds really cool. Let's go practice with our rescue harnesses. Let's go practice with our throwbacks. Let's go practice with this stuff. And I get a lot of like, I don't know. So I think we all like the idea. I think we all like the idea of being certified. I have like, we'll go to a class. I got my certification. And once we're certified, we're like, I'm certified. I'm good. I got the patch. It's right here. Certified. See, rescue certified. But to me, the training, the ongoing training trumps that certification. Like, certification is just like, I did the things, I learned the things. Training is where you like get the practice. And so when you go take a rescue class, you're learning the topic. It's not even training. That's just like learning. Training is when you go out and like do it afterwards. And so that's one of the reasons, like, I have this idea I'm going to try to do here, hopefully this next year, of having like one day courses here in Hood River where people come and it's just a one day bite. Like, hey, let's just go, you know, do throwbacks for a day or half. Let's do throwbacks for a morning and mechanical advantage for the afternoon. Let's go do like just one day, not even classes, just one day practice sessions. And like, I'll charge for it because it like takes my time and I have to like use my resources. So, but like, it's a way you can like come with, you may not get your friends to do it, but like, I will find like five people from five different groups will come together and the five of us will train. And then maybe your friends will do it. I have no idea. But I think that trying to encourage more practice and training is a good thing. Yep. Okay. Here we go, Steve. In my opinion, transport hinge is potentially useful in the within the RAPO to talk about a stern. Vector pulls is useful if you need to change direction of pull on a 3-to-1. Yeah, so the transport hitch, this is a super cool thing, right? What he's saying, I mean, it's pretty rad. The idea here, my whiteboard, I have barely any room, is if you have your raft, like let's say pinned up against a rock, right? That's your raft, there's a thwart. You transport hitch from there to there and you change the shape of the raft. Like one key thing to do, like, the secret to getting your raft unpinned is change the shape of the raft. Change where water is accumulating in the boat. Try different things to change. Like, that's a big thing in my brain. Like, change the shape of the raft. Deflate tubes. Pulling on it a lot of times isn't pulling it off. It's changing its shape. If you can make a tube fall over, it changes the shape. Putting a transport hitch, like basically tying a rope from here. Let's use a different color. Tying a rope from here to here. And doing a transport hitch like brings the ends together, right? And it can change the shape of the raft. It can work really effectively. Super awesome idea, like in theory. In the real world, usually the person stuck on the boat that's wrapped isn't the person who's the most competent. It's on average, the person who's on the boat is the least competent or in the lower competent levels. And so usually there's not somebody on the boat who can do a transport hitch. It's just like they're not there. Usually the competent people who are trained are on shore. And that's why the 3-to-1 is really good, because they do on the shore, right? All the stuff is done on shore. Like, hey, we're going to throw you a rope. Just attach it. Like, hopefully you attach it to 2 or 3 D-rings. Hopefully you can do that. But usually the ninja who can do a transport hitch isn't with the boat. And the thing of the transport hitch is it you cannot just learn it once and remember it. You can't. And I can't. Maybe you can. It is hard to remember. And so it takes somebody who's a ninja to set a transport hitch up. Unless somebody can swim out to the boat and set it up for the person who's stuck. Or maybe sometimes the really good people get stuck too, I'm sure. But I don't think practically the person who's stuck will actually be able to set it up. And the odds of you having access to the ND rings in a wrap boat are not high, right? So let me share with you my album of wrapped boats, if I can find it here. Let me find my album. I have a bunch of – when boats wrap – I like to collect photos of them so that we have them for the future, like right now, for example. And so I'm looking through my Flickr album. There we go. Raft pins. And most of my, just to be really clear, most of my raft pins that I, let me see if I can do this, present, share screen, have been gear boats. So like with a paddle boat, maybe this is easier. With a gear boat, a bit harder. So like, here's an example of a wrap. I just like, I don't think I'm going to get access that the ND rings are underwater. Right. So like I could maybe go like here to here. Right. Maybe, but like, I'm not like that. You can tell by this boat, the ends are wrapped backwards. Like, you're not going to be able to manage a transport hitch with this. So that's a photo of a wrap. Let's look at some more. There's some people pulling. This is that system I don't want to show. It's embarrassing. This one, same thing. Like, there's probably access to the ND rings, but because it's a gear boat, there's gear in the way of managing the transport hitch. This one, I have a pretty high level of confidence a transport hitch isn't going to work there. So that's probably not going to work. That's the same one. This is one they just got off. They just got this one by pulling it. It's kind of crazy. I mean, they did a good job with that one. There's another same one. This one, again, the boat's fully underwater. So having access to the ends would be tough. And then the you have to manage it under the water, so that one would be tough. This is a flat wrap. It might work here. Maybe. I don't know. This is a ducky wrap. So like what happens in a lot of wraps is it's wrapped around the rock. And so like the transport hitch would also have to bend around the rock. I'm not sure how you tighten it there. Maybe you could. Here's another one. The D-rings are pretty, the end D-rings are pretty inaccessible. And again, gear being the way makes it hard. That's the same one, same one. This is what really works. Hopefully everybody sees this. Yeah. I mean, really, honestly, we did a 2-to-1 on this one. And yes, people are downstream of the rope. I know what you're going to say, but we did what we did. This is my friend Dan. And I mean, him and I, there's been like 10 wraps where he's the one on the boat and I'm on shore. Like we have a communication. And so we just did like, hey, let's do the 2-to-1 like we did on this other river. And he had a pulley, threw it on there, and we did a 2-to-1. And we just pulling upstream at this angle a little bit changes the shape of the boat and makes this area less of a catcher's mitt for water, and it pulled it off. That's when I first saw it. That's another view of that one. I don't think a transport hitch would work there. This is Bill, Crazy Bill TV, when he wrapped his ducky on the Upper East Fork of the Hood. It probably would work here. Here's a ducky pin on the Chetco. Again, like the D-rings we want to access, they're just underwater. Like they're just not there. That's just kind of stuck. Yeah, it's hard to tell if it'd work on that one, but probably not. It's a pretty big boat. That's an 18-foot boat, a Blossom. Same boat. Yeah, okay. So it's a long way of saying, like, you're right. It's potentially useful for a wrap boat to taco about a stern. But practically, in my experience in the real world, like, it's not it's if you look at most wraps, it's not going to work. And the person on the boat probably doesn't know how to do it. So it's like, it's a cool idea, but whatever. Vector pull is useful if you need to change direction of pulling through. Yeah, no, once you have, that's a great point, Steve. Once you have a rope tightened, if you need to change the direction or get a little bit more force, the vector pull is great. It's good for that first like 10 to 15 degrees of pull. You get a little bit extra. So if you need a little bit of a change of direction, or just a little bit more power in your 3-to-1. But what's happening with your vector pull, like going back to the rule of 12s, if you're doing a Z rig and you have four people pulling and then you throw a vector pull on top, you're starting to break the rule of 12s. Like the forces are getting really big. That's like, if you have a really tight line from a 3-to-1 and then you vector pull it, the forces can multiply pretty quick and you can start breaking things. So if I add a vector pull to a 3-to-1, I'm going to have everybody, stand back. Things might snap. Like we're going to have things go weird. Okay. Gone long. When I get the ropes out, I start with a straight pull, but I set up a progress capture of the pulley. Yep. Then vector pull, then 3-to-1. Yep. That's smart. I like that. I would probably, yeah, that's pretty smart. Pull, and then yeah, progress capture. Let's pull and capture progress. Okay, we have a tight line. Let's just see what happens if we pull in the middle, see if we can get a little bit off. Vector pull, super smart. And then just the 3-to-1's like the ratcheting system. Like the vector pull's like, let's try a little bit. 3-to-1's like pull, stop. The 3-to-1's like a ratcheting system. It's great at distance, so progress capture. Just keep pulling, keep progress capturing. Yeah, that's the way to go. So, yep. I'm learning that inspiring people to delve into safety training now takes a panic situation. At least, It takes a panic situation for commercial guides too. A lot of guides take rescue classes because they're told they have to. Like if you want a job, take a rescue class. But I mean, anytime we're spending money and our time to go to a class, it's hard. I mean, I don't know. I should probably go take a class to have better handwriting. I don't want to spend my time and money to go take a class for better handwriting. I should probably take a class on better speaking in a microphone, right? I could take an online class. I just don't want to. I should. And, you know, once there's no more viewers in the show, then I'll have a panic situation. I'm like, all right, I need to speak better. I'll go take a better speaking class. But like, people don't want to spend their time and money to, they know they should, they just don't want to. And I get that. I think the key in my experience with all of our courses, the courses that we do, is to make sure they're really good. Like that, they courses need to be really good, really well taught, engaging, fun, topical, you know, not just like somebody. One of the problems, in my opinion, I could be wrong. I probably am wrong. I know that there's probably 100 people yelling at me right now. I'm going to say it. A lot of rescue classes are teaching like a dogmatic, maybe that's the wrong word. I apologize if it is, a dogmatic curriculum designed for firefighters. And we're learning things that we're probably never going to use because they're designed for firefighters, saving people from shore. And so, and some of that stuff isn't fun. But if you can do things that we do in the real world, like for whitewater boaters, it's applicable, and you make it fun, and it's taught by people who are good at teaching, who, when I say good at teaching, it's not that hard. Just don't talk too much. Like, give people activities, guide them, have a well thought out lesson plan, like introduce the three things you're going to teach, talk about a little bit, have some sort of activity, have a conclusion, keep people warm and fed, and just like, it's an enjoyable course, and like, help the social atmosphere be fun. Then the course is fun, and then people want to take the course. But a lot of these courses are like, let's go, we just got to bust through these dogmatic things. We have 2 days to bust through, 3 days of material. Let's just go, 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 go. And the ratios, like sometimes there's like, you know, 20 students for one or two instructors. That's a lot. And so it's hard to feel like you're engaging. You're just kind of standing around your hand in your pockets while things are happening. Where good courses, people want to be engaged. So anyway, I think, So to inspire training, I don't know how to inspire people to train. What I've attempted to do was just offer good courses. Hopefully if we offer good courses, people come to our courses. And hopefully other people out there are offering good courses too, and people are inspired to go to those good courses as well. Like, hopefully the level of education and the type of course is really good. Yeah. Okay, so I think that's the last comment. And I've been kind of on a tangent today, a lot of tangents. So I'm going to end this one up. I just want to say thank you all for watching. It is super important to me that if you disagree with me, I'm not going to get mad at you. Like, I might, like, if you're mean about it, I will be. But, like, tell me. If you're, like, a rescue instructor who's watching this and you're like, Zach, you're dumb. This is why we do things. I want to hear it. These discussions are important. I wish we could all be in a room right now having a conversation about this stuff. And I could be like, oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. Thanks for the feedback. I never thought about that. I wish that could happen, but we can't. All we have is me talking to this camera with my whiteboard and my ideas. And so the best we can do is, if you have opinions about any of this stuff, just put them in the comments. And I may not respond because sometimes I think about it. I'll read it and then think about it for like a few hours. And then I might forget to respond, but I really do appreciate the comments and helps me adapt like my own opinions about all this stuff, including rescue, which, you know, if I learn something from this, I will change how I teach and change what I do in the real world, which I think is really good. So a couple of things from Heidi. I'm going to Bhutan soon, pretty soon. Pretty excited. And yeah, Greg's been talking about coming to Hood River, and we'll do like a cat frame talk. So let's see. So that's it for the episode. Thanks all for watching, and I'll see you next Tuesday.